Good evening, I'm Danielle Kading, and you're listening to Hear Me Out on Wisconsin Public Radio. Up next, we review the controversy caused by an April Fool's Day edition printed by UW-Superior's campus newspaper, The Promethean. A UWS student filed a grievance against the newspaper's editors, claiming they had improperly noticed the paper as a work of satire. The student also claimed the paper contained terms that were misogynistic, racist, and anti-Semitic. At the same time, the newspaper's editors have said they would and will not apologize for the edition. They say they meant to offend readers and start a dialogue about issues on campus. The university has since dropped its investigation into the student's grievance, but we spoke with Frank Lamonti, executive director of the Student Press Law Center, to get a better idea of what issues students encounter when they take on satire and some jokes fall flat with readers.
It's very commonplace, and it has been for a long time, for student journalists to face adversity and pushback from their administrators or from hostile student government leaders. But it's less common that they face this type of hostility and pushback just from their own rank-and-file readers. That's something that seems to be becoming increasingly commonplace as people not only push back against the newspaper by refusing to read it, but also seek to have penalties imposed on the publication. That's something that we've seen, for example, at Wesleyan University recently, where the student newspaper actually lost all of its institutional funding in retaliation for a column they carried that offended a lot of people because of its criticism of the Black Lives Matter movement. So we're seeing around the country that angry readers are actually pushing to have penalties imposed on newspapers, which is a worrisome phenomenon.
What takes place then when you're contacted, you know, in cases like this? I mean, are you involved in court cases or?
It's entirely possible for student journalists who suffer a tangible loss, like the loss of their funding or like a suspension or a disciplinary action, to bring a First Amendment legal challenge if they're at a public institution where the First Amendment applies. We actually are supporting students right now at the University of Kansas who are suing their university over the withdrawal of funding for their newspaper, which was in retaliation for an editorial critical of the Student Government Association. So it's entirely possible to bring those cases, but fortunately, they don't happen very often. Fortunately, what generally happens is that cooler heads prevail and there's a negotiated resolution. It's especially worrisome to us if the disciplinary or punitive mechanisms of a university are invoked against student journalists. That's just not what they were designed for. And a newspaper is part of what's considered the marketplace of ideas on a college campus. And the way that you fight back against unpleasant or unwanted ideas is by speaking more loudly. There are all kinds of marketplace solutions that students can and should take advantage of. If they read something that they find distasteful, they can boycott the publication. They can let the advertisers know that they're unhappy. They can certainly write letters or even start their own publication. There are plenty of things that you can do, but bringing down the punitive authority of a university on a student newsroom is a really extreme measure that raises some significant First Amendment red flags.
In these cases that you end up seeing, is it because they're threatening a loss of funding, or is it because the university is seeking to punish them somehow, or that students or professors are taking action?
I think there's a range of situations. One that comes to mind several years ago at the University of Alaska Fairbanks involved a humor issue where some people in the audience believed that the students crossed the line of good taste. There was some humor that was regarded as sexist in the paper, and the result of that was that an employee of the university actually ended up filing a sex discrimination complaint with the Title IX office of the institution. Fortunately, that wound up getting dismissed, but not before the students were put through the ordeal of being placed under investigation for an entire year. even just the existence of that investigation can be very intimidating and chilling on the exercise of First Amendment speech. So that type of a mechanism really is not suited for resolving a grievance about editorial content. There's been a range, unfortunately, of adversity facing student journalists that runs the range from loss of funding to disciplinary complaints brought in front of a student conduct board to Title IX discrimination or harassment complaints.
What do you think is behind a lot of these issues that come up? I mean, do you feel that people just aren't educated about the First Amendment and how far those protections go?
I think what we're seeing is a direct consequence of the climate that's been created, starting with our K-12 schools. Our K-12 schools, unfortunately, have engaged in some pretty heavy-handed censorship of journalism over the years, and they have conveyed the message to people in the audience that a newspaper is supposed to be only sweetness and light. It's supposed to be only happy, favorable, positive things that make you feel good. And that if you see somebody say something that's not happy and positive, that your response is to file a disciplinary complaint and get them punished. What we've really lost as a society, and this belongs at the feet of our K-12 institutions, what we've really lost is the ability to just have a rational conversation where we hash out differences of opinion and we come to a resolution. The immediate response these days, it seems, as soon as somebody reads or hears something that they find offensive, is that they want to see institutional punishment brought down on the speaker. And that's almost always the wrong tool for the job. There are institutional punishments for genuine instances of things like sexual harassment, and that's what they should be used for. We shouldn't be cheapening the use of a very well-intended statute like Title IX to just resolve complaints over having read something unpleasant. Those type of complaints need to be resolved by hashing it out as you would with any business from whom you received unsatisfactory service. Basically, a newsroom is a business, and people should resort to those marketplace solutions like complaining internally up the ladder to the editors before they invoke the punitive authority of a government agency.
Well, in this case, you know, the person who filed the grievance had attempted to speak with the editorial board of the newspaper, and they essentially issued them a statement saying that, you know, we put this information out, this is all we have to say, and we stand behind our paper.
Well, and again, there are marketplace responses, including boycotting the paper, boycotting the advertisers, starting your own publication, asking to have a letter or a column printed, and all of those things are the right way to respond when you read something that you don't like. A public university is a government agency. Government agencies can't use their punitive authority to punish the content of speech unless it crosses some very extreme lines. And certainly no one is saying that by reading a newspaper they felt that they were in a threat of imminent violence, for instance, right? That would be the type of speech that a university could use its punitive authority to punish. But short of something that crosses some pretty extreme lines, the First Amendment protects even speech that is hurtful to people's feelings or that is offensive or that is edgy. And frankly, it has to at a university. Think about all the times that a public university hosts a performance of the vagina monologues or assigns people to watch R-rated films as part of a film class. And if the standard was that every time somebody feels offended by something they see or hear on a university campus, they can get the speaker punished, then our campuses would be very barren places for ideas.
So just basically, the burden of proof is on the university or the student to show that the sedition would cause, you know, imminent harm to someone.
Exactly. There's a line between speech that people simply find offensive versus speech that actually places them in reasonable fear of harm. And in order for speech to be categorized as harassing or threatening in nature, it has to be, in the eyes of the Supreme Court, severe and pervasive, which is to say it has to be the kind of speech that's forced upon you as an unwilling audience member. And a newspaper is just never going to rise to that level because nobody is compelled to read it. Nobody is forcing anyone to read an article in a paper that they find unpleasant. There are plenty of other ways that you can avert your eyes and not be exposed to that offensive speech, and that's what the First Amendment requires. You can't invoke the punitive authority of a government agency in the absence of a very extreme set of facts, and it would be almost impossible to conceive of a set of facts that could apply to a student media publication.
And you mentioned, too, that this has happened with April Fool's Day editions in particular. And has that happened in recent history?
Yeah, April Fool's editions have been a particular source of conflict for obvious reasons. People like to push boundaries, and humor itself often depends on walking that line between offensiveness and funny. And sometimes people lose that tightrope battle and they fall off the tightrope, and they're not funny and they're just offensive. And although offensiveness may be unpleasant to people, offensive speech, our courts have told us over and over again, is still protected by the First Amendment. There is no constitutional right to be protected against offense. But yes, yeah, unfortunately, we've seen numerous instances. There was a rather memorable one at the University of Missouri a couple of years ago where the students used a slur to refer to lesbian students in a joking way, and students were quite offended by the use of that in a humor publication, and it came quite close to the student editors actually incurring disciplinary action from the university. They ended up resigning from their posts, but fortunately being spared further punitive consequences. But that's an example of the kinds of things, and unfortunately these cluster around. Sometimes people go for a cheap laugh, and they will make a joke at the expense of women or minorities or other folks on campus who might already feel like they're marginalized, and that is a really cheap way to get a laugh, and people should use better judgment and be above that. But fortunately, there is a difference between what is the optimally polite judgment to exercise and what is a punishable offense. And sometimes you get to make a judgment mistake. Sometimes you get to make an error. And I think what the student editors should always do is to be mindful of their audience. They should listen to their audience just like any business listens to its customers. And if they've lost their audience, if they've gone too far, if they've pushed buttons with their audience that drives them away and repels them, then the editors need to address that. They need to address that head on and say, we goofed, and we're going to make this right in the future.
But in any case, it's inappropriate for a university to rule against a student publication based on satire or offensive speech, unless it rises to that level of harm.
Right. I suppose it's possible that you could conceive of a circumstance where someone was called out by name individually in a way that targeted them so that they were experiencing harassment on campus. In that event, that a person was actually targeted by name with some kind of false accusations so that they were literally experiencing harassment that made it impossible for them to continue attending the institution, then you could see that the speech might fall beyond the boundaries of the First Amendment. But I don't know that that set of circumstances exists. We certainly haven't seen it. And absent something that extreme, the First Amendment applies with full force on a college campus.
Well, I really appreciate you taking time to talk to me about this, Frank. Is there anything that I'm missing that you would like to add?
No, I mean, I guess just to sort of reinforce, you know, I realize that people often don't like to hear First Amendment as a response to speech that they find unpleasant to hear because they think that's a very unsatisfying response. And you'll see people say they don't want journalists hiding behind the First Amendment. But the fact is, there is no hiding behind the First Amendment. The First Amendment is a foundational principle of our country, and everything else has to accommodate itself around that. And some of the very same people who often are critical of journalists for exercising their First Amendment rights are also beneficiaries of the First Amendment. You know, if you are a campus activist, if you're the kind of person who's involved in campus activism on behalf of causes, you too are a beneficiary of the First Amendment. And if you start going down that road of letting university administrators use their punitive authority because some other people find the message to be disagreeable, you may find that you have just let the genie out of the bottle and can't get it back in again. You know, that that level of involvement by administrators in policing unpleasant or offensive speech is something that nobody wants on a college campus. It just cannot end in a good way, and it may very well turn on the people who have unleashed it.
Well, again, I really appreciate it, Frank. Thanks so much for sharing your time and these specific instances that you see across the country. Again, that was Frank Lamonti, Executive Director of the Student Press and Law Center. You can learn more about university media and freedom of the press on their website at splc.org. We're going to take a short break for these announcements, and when we come back, we'll take a look at one of the most popular diners in northern Wisconsin. I'm Danielle Kading, and this is Hear Me Out.